Hello and welcome to SNL Energy. I'm Jennifer Zajac, and with me today is Senior Editor Glenn Bozzert, my colleague and friend. How are you today?
Good, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm good. We're going to talk today about the EPA and emissions and greenhouse gases, because there's an awful lot going on, and I'm sure that there are many people who would just like to get the big picture as to what's going on and how it impacts the utility sector. Let's start off, Glenn, by if you can talk about what the outlook is on the regulatory policies on greenhouse gas emissions. We know that Congress is looking to usurp the EPA. EPA is looking to regulate it. What's your take?
Well, on Congress's end, as far as the broader emissions bill, many people are saying it's highly unlikely it'll get passed this year, given the ongoing political battles over health care reform, the economy, and also the upcoming midterm elections. They always say, well, during midterm elections, it's tough to get a bill passed. But that's not necessarily true, because actually a major energy bill was passed in 1992, which also was a midterm election year. And another substantial energy bill just fell short of passage by two votes in 2004, which is another midterm election year, but it was passed the following year. However, the political atmosphere in those years, between those years and right now, is quite a bit different. Those energy bills were largely the product of a bipartisan effort, which really isn't the case now. EEI's Tom Kuhn recently said that the Kerry Boxer cap-and-trade bill probably won't get 50 votes in the Senate right now, much less the 60 votes needed to overcome the potential Republican filibuster. But others have said, well, it may have more of a chance, especially if Senate Democrats find a way to gain some support of some Republicans, such as by adding provisions, easing restrictions on offshore drilling or supporting nuclear power. General consensus out there, it'll be hard to get a broad cap-and-trade bill passed this year. So because of that, EPA seems to be willing and ready to forge ahead on its own. As many of you know, it recently made an endangerment finding that carbon dioxide is harmful to the human health. And that has raised a lot of consternation in Congress. Senator Lisa Murkowski from Alaska actually has introduced a resolution on the Senate floor to disapprove of EPA regulating carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas emissions under the Clean Air Act. So far, she has the support of 35 Republicans and 3 Democrats for a total of about 38 or maybe 39 votes in support, but she will need 51 votes to get it to pass. And even if it does pass, it would have to be signed by President Obama, and most people see that as highly unlikely. We'll see what happens on that, but it seems like for now, EPA will go ahead on its own. This suggests that when it does, there'll be a lot of litigation because of it, but as in most regulatory rules, they go into effect unless someone can convince a court to enact a stay, which is also highly unusual. So then the question, I guess, comes to, well, what should utilities be doing in all this uncertainty between Congress and EPA? And a lot of them are forging ahead with their own clean air initiatives. But many are not spending a lot of money doing it because they want more certainty before they do. So as a result, a lot of coal plants have been put on hold. The plants that are being built are mostly gas plants. And others, like Jim Rogers of Duke Energy, have been calling for more radical solutions, such as possibly re-regulation in states. So a lot of these larger gas plants could be, the cost of those plants could be recovered, or guaranteed recovery. He also has called for the enactment of a low carbon standard as opposed to a renewable portfolio standard in many states.
What's the reaction to Rogers' suggestion? Do people think he's out in left field, or is he speaking for the general consensus for the utility executives?
Well, he's been pretty vocal in his pursuing his ideas. He's been up on Capitol Hill, and he does have some support. My sense of it is it's going to be a hard slog for him, given all the disunity or all the political infighting that's going on the Hill as it is. But because of all that political infighting, who knows? Maybe a more radical solution could gain some traction.
Is there any unity that you're sensing with the utility executives? For example, you just mentioned Jim Rogers of Duke Energy. He's very active on Capitol Hill. AEP's Mike Morris, he's spending a lot of time in D.C. Are they all kind of giving the same message, or are they all kind of working their own different agendas?
Well, EEI is their trade association, so EEI has been pretty consistent in their message. They want certainty. They would prefer a bill, but they want it to be a good bill. So, as a matter of fact, Tom Kuhn recently, their EEI's president, said that it doesn't matter, the timing of the bill doesn't matter so much, even if it's a year or two off, but the main point to him is that he wants to make sure that it's a good bill. And of course, EEI has come up with a list of provisions that it believes that needs to be included in the bill, and that's what they've been pursuing. As far as these utility heads going on their own, usually they have the most power, or their message has the most strength when it comes through association like EEI or American Public Power Association. But, you never know. Up on Capitol Hill, things happen that you never can quite understand. But I would give more credence to EEI's positions, probably getting more support than maybe the individual utility has.
Let's get back to coal-fired plants. As you mentioned earlier, a lot of utilities are putting them on hold. They're building more natural gas-fired plants. The EPA has already said that under its Clean Air Act that they are going to be targeting coal plants because they're on the list of top emitters. Do you see this as a temporary halt, or do you think this is going to be a long-term thing, Glenn, where the utilities are just going to push coal plants to the side?
Utilities keep saying that coal has to be part of the mix, because if there isn't, the cost of power will go up incredible rates. Coal is cheap. There's a lot of coal plants still in existence, and building the large plants needed to replace coal plants would be very expensive. So that's why, for instance, Jim Rogers has been calling for, instead of a renewable portfolio standard, a low-carbon standard, because then you could call on a broad range of different resources. Many, of course, have said nuclear power has to be part of that, as does natural gas. But many also say that coal, it's got to be a part of the mix because of the cheapness of it, the abundance of it here in the U.S., and because there are ongoing efforts to clean up the coal. They're working on creating more clean coal technologies. There are ways of cleaning up the coal, although those are expensive as well. But I was recently at a conference where they were talking about all the different costs and ways of possibly meeting greenhouse gas emissions targets. Almost everybody, it was a strong consensus that coal has got to be part of the solution.
It makes sense to diversify your portfolio. The technology that we're talking about, the clean coal costs associated with that, the scrubbers, the carbon capture and sequestration, that's not going to be cheap. Combined with potential cap and trade costs tacked on top of that, down the line, could coal become very pricey?
It could be pricey, but from the different estimates and studies that I've seen and that were debated at this recent conference, it still would be cheaper than wind or solar or many of the alternative energy technologies being discussed, and even cheaper than gas, according to some projections. So, as we all know, the price fluctuations in natural gas and oil over the last few years have been very, very wide. And coal prices also, their prices have been volatile as well, but not quite as volatile as the other fuels.
Glenn, the EPA is proposing tougher ozone air quality standards. It'll certainly impact the utility sector. Can you talk about the numbers that they're talking about, the 6 parts per billion, and what
sure.
this means?
Well, what the EPA has done is they have come out with a proposed rule, and what they want to do is modify another rule that issued just in March 2008. And under that rule, ozone, they put targets on the amount of ozone that can be emitted into the air. And under the March 2008 rule, the standard was 7.5 parts per billion. Now, that's very small. That's very little. But still, it was a fairly dramatic decrease from a previous rule that had been in effect for many years. Now, recently, EPA has proposed to lower that amount even further to somewhere between 6 parts per billion and 7 parts per billion, as opposed to 7.5 parts per billion. Many utility interests have come out opposed to the rule because they said, well, it's going to drive up costs dramatically, but the reality of it is it isn't that much more strict of a standard than what it had put into effect in 2008. There's also a lot of uncertainties about how many areas will be subject to the lower end of the new standard, because it will range somewhere between 6 parts per billion and 7 parts per billion. And they are to be phased in between 2014 and 2031, with deadlines depending on the severity of the problem. Thus, the ultimate impact, it remains to be seen. EPA is saying that the health benefits will range somewhere between $13 billion and $100 billion, which is a pretty broad range, while the expected cost of implementing it, if they do approve it, would range between $19 billion and $90 billion, which is a lot of money, and some have suggested it's actually the most expensive federal rules ever issued. But the ultimate impact, like I said, remains to be seen. Meanwhile, EEI has come out, and they've kind of been opposing the rule, citing all the dramatic ozone-related emissions reductions that the industry has already accomplished through spending more than $10 billion over the last few years to reduce other ozone-related NOx emissions.
Glenn Bozard, thank you very much for speaking with me today.
Thank you, Jennifer.
All right. And this is another SNL Energy podcast. Thanks for listening.